Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Barlingham Barrett. My name is Simon Barrett, and I'm joined by my very good friend, veteran trial lawyer Manny Barling. Manny, hello.
Hi, Simon. How are you doing? And welcome to everyone across the U.S. We're having generally good weather everywhere, and that's always nice, isn't it?
It certainly is. But with Thanksgiving just a couple of days away, I watched something this morning that absolutely blew my mind. I would have assumed it was just a joke. However, Candy Crowley of CNN is heartily known for her jokes. She obtained a document from the TSA detailing rules and regulations for holiday air travel. New items on the banned carry-on list included whole turkeys, turkey gravy, and cranberry sauce. However, you are permitted to bring on turkey legs and pumpkin pie. I guess a terrorist could wreak havoc with a turkey, gravy, and cranberry sauce. I mean, I've had some pretty awful variations of those ingredients over the years, but I've never seen an explosive version.
Oh, really? You've never seen a turkey bomb before?
No.
Okay, where have you been, you know? And it's funny, and I want to, while we're at it, welcome John Perry and Sam Moffey to the show, who are trying to choke back laughter, but I'm not sure they're laughing at the story, the irony of our country right now. And guys, I had a terrible dream last night. I had this dream that I used a time machine, one of the late model versions of H.G. Wells' time machine. The problem was it was made in China, so it only had two trips in it. But I did manage to go in the future and pick up a newspaper. The newspaper said Romney was found dead, stabbed in the back by hundreds of Republicans. And that's what, you rush back because it's so scary. Anything Chinese, you got to worry about whether it's going to work. So, anyway, I say that with a sense of humor, because it just seems like everybody in the world is attacking poor old Mitt, you know, and you would have think that the whole election was totally his idea and everything was totally done by him. And there seems to be an irony in that. What does anyone else think about that?
Well, the GOP are distancing themselves from Romney at the speed of light.
Yeah, they are. And it's unfair to Romney. Romney's a good guy. I don't always agree with him politically, but you can't say a bad word about him as a human being. And he's someone who truly cares about everything he does. And I just think it's just kind of crazy the way, you know, the Republicans just have responded to him in such a negative way. You know, Sam, I know you have a lot of respect for Romney, too, and read some books on him. Does this bother and surprise you in some way?
Yes and no. I think they got beat so bad they need a scapegoat. It seemed like, hey, everybody else is dumping on Mitt. Why don't we too?
Yeah.
And it doesn't say a lot about the people who are dumping on him. I think you have to look at the people who aren't saying stuff about him. You know, the ones who, you know, like I was shocked Bobby Jindal was out there. He sent me some stuff on that Manny and some of the governors. And I'm thinking to myself, what you guys are the first ones in line. So they're already thrown the hats into the ring already for 2016. That's the impression I got. So they have to, you know, say some things. I think if Mitt Romney, and I agree with you, is a decent guy, and I don't agree with everything he did, it's too bad he couldn't have run as the Mitt Romney that everyone, I think, really knows that he really is. But because of the 20 Republican debates, there were horrible Republican primaries where a guy like Ricks and Porum could compete and actually almost win the nomination, forced Romney into all sorts of positions he didn't want to really take. And then by the time when the smoke was all cleared after the the summer, he had to stick to some of those things, and a lot of them were social issues that were just way out of step with mainstream America. And, you know, I don't think he felt comfortable in arguing with them and doing them. I mean, the high water mark for his campaign was the first debate where, I mean, it seemed like to just, he didn't have anything around him other than he was weird. That was the only time he was really himself, and then he won. And then some things happened after that, and he went back into that strange campaign mode or the Mitt Romney during the primaries, and he got the last two debates was terrible, and he got beat, and the president found his game and beat him, you know, and decisively. And I tell you one thing, as much as I don't like David Axelrod, the guy knows how to run a campaign. He is to the Obama campaign what Karl Rove was to George Bush twice.
Yeah. You know, John, you and I earlier in the year had a conversation about some of the primaries where we discussed that very real possibility that he was taking positions he wouldn't be able to get out of, specifically Romney. And I thought it would come back and haunt him, and apparently it did. And I know you felt had different feelings at the time. I wonder if you've changed yours in any way.
Let me say this. First of all, Simon, that cranberry sauce and what was it, pumpkin pie? My former relationships, those were definitely hazardous materials, required a hazmat response. So I totally agree with that.
Yeah. Are we going to go into your track record on previous relationships?
Romney, all right. I think I was really impressed with the guy. I mean, week after week, I was defending him over some topic or other. I do find it ironic. People who did nothing but demonize and defame him for months now suddenly are saying he's a nice guy. I thought he acquitted himself well with class and dignity during the campaign. He's a decent, honorable guy. And I wish I had him as a friend. I always said that.
But John, you've just done a Romney on us.
Are you involved, Simon?
Thank you so much, Simon. You beat me to it. But, you know, John, I think Sam will tell you this. I've never said Romney was a bad guy. I've always said to him,
every week. Come on.
No, I mean, personally, I disagree with him philosophically.
I mean, he hated a kid in high school, he never paid taxes, he was responsible for Joe Septic's wife's death. I mean,
I never said that.
But we talked about that stuff, what a despicable individual he was.
Have I ever called him?
Not you, Manny, but that was the topic. You know, every week it was something with the poor guy.
Well, my complaint with him is he changes spots. Quicker. I mean, leopards can't change spots.
I'm not talking
the way
about
he does.
His policies, just himself, his morality. It was questioned every week.
John, take a deep breath.
Yeah,
relax. All right, it's not the Democrats that are crowing over Obama's re-election. It's the Republicans that are fleeing from Romney.
Simon, the guy lost. He, I like to think, left the public stage with honor and dignity. I do think, like I know when I played sports, I never should have been courted after the game because I always blame the refs. So there's emotion involved. And people who lose a race or a game or any tough battle should go incognito for a while and keep their mouth shut, because anything he says is going to be seen as sour grapes.
Well,
and
I agree.
I've done that many times in my life.
Well, I agree. I believe in the George Bush viewpoint is never show your face again so nobody, you know, can comment on what an idiot you are.
He looked at sports. So
we have to give you credit for that. He has gone away.
You're giving Bush credit for recognizing that the whole world hates him?
Yes, that's some people. I gotta give some people can't when they're hated by the rest of the world. They still gotta get out there.
You mean like Karl Rove hasn't got it yet?
No, Karl Rove hasn't. He didn't get it. And I think maybe one of the great things for the Republican Party is that those people who've been running it are just so out of Rove and Dick Morris and all those people are just so focused. They help shape some of Romney's flip-flopping, whatever. And instead of listening to the people, which I think Romney would have been better at, because that's what he was. I mean, he's some of the things he's done in his life, where he's shown that he's a caring, decent, successful man, were like buried. Instead, he took issues that were just totally I think he had a choke card when he said some of the things that he had to say. And his wife cringed and all that, and the people who knew him. But that's the problem with the Republican Party of the 21st century. As many of you pointed out, it's so out of step with mainstream America as the liberal wing of the Democrats were in the 80s. And they found Bill Clinton, and the Republicans are going to have to find somebody else, and be grateful that they should be so lucky that they didn't get lose the House of Representatives, and they got beat pretty bad all over.
Yeah.
And they're gonna have to find a new reach out and broaden their base, and that's just the way it is.
I don't see in my case, and someone correct me if they disagree. I don't see among the people left. Anyone who has that potential, though, certainly not Bobby Jindal, and some of the others are crowing the most. These people, in fact, I'm really surprised that Jindal has as much position in the party as he's sort of like Herman Cain. They're the tokens of the group. But past that, who else would? Certainly not Sarah Palin. There was an article in the LA Times today on why Sarah Palin should run for the presidency.
Of course,
it was written by a woman, of course. I'm sorry, Sam.
Oh, that's okay. No, she will run. There's no doubt in my mind. I think a lot of people in the Republican Party stood to the side for this one, and they were waiting for 2016. I think they probably knew that there wasn't of the men up there who Romney did have the best shot, and he closed the gap popular vote-wise than McCain. Electoral college-wise, it was a wipeout. I mean, just a total landslide, as far as I'm concerned. And I think the way the founding fathers wanted it set up anyway, and it worked that way. As I emailed you, Manny, I think there's two Republicans out there that I think that the party and better listen to and better listen to strong. And right now, today, that would be Rand Paul and Marco Rubio. The two senators, I think they're outspoken on the right issues, and young, and they're more into economic freedom. So they're not so into the social, the social aspect of the Republican Party, the religious aspect of the Republican Party, and therefore, if the primary was held today, they both wouldn't win. And that's the problem with the Republican Party, that the moral majority, which is neither, as we always used to joke about, runs the Republican Party. Look what it did to Mitt Romney. Look what it did to John McCain. And if they go down that route again, they're looking at, I think as you said, Manny, be 20 more years before they get the White House.
Yeah, I agree.
Manny.
John, do you have a feeling about that?
I'm the wrong guy to ask about predictions, Manny. For the 40th consecutive year, I'm picking the Cubs to win the division.
Uh-huh.
And he's the best college coach in the country.
Yeah, that's what I heard. He just is a horrible game coach and just doesn't pay attention to the obvious. And from other than that, he's a great coach. And
he gets through the next 4 years like everyone else.
Yeah, right.
Well, when I say Rand Paul, I watched some of the – I got to see his speech at the Republican convention because I watched that aspect of it. I wanted to see the goodbye to his – how they kind of strayed on his father. I mean, I think I thought it was pathetic that Ron Paul, who I think really was the one Republican who really did actually energize people better than any of the other ones, did that, and probably would have gave Obama a better run for his money than Romney did. But that aside, I remember when Rand Paul stood up in front of the Republican convention and said, look, Republicans, we have to realize that this that the debt is the biggest problem we have, and the defense budget has to be cut. You have to start cutting defense and changing our foreign policy and how we spend money. He got booed.
Hey, Sam. Conflict here. I got a big problem with Ron Paul not publicly supporting Romney. I lost a lot of respect for him.
John, his son did.
You can't be ideologically pure in these times. That's my.
Let's finish this before we move on, Simon. The only comment I have about that is I don't agree with you about Ron Paul for one simple reason. He has an isolationist foreign policy, and considering the number of Jews, particularly look at Florida, he would have had no chance whatsoever of getting the Jewish vote in Florida. And that is one of his problems, and that creates problems with him with the evangelicals, because where I see people writing issues about, you know, Israel, why are we in this because of them, et cetera, et cetera. We're there because if we allow the Arabs to take over the Holy Land, Muslims particularly, then they will destroy it the same way they destroyed valuable statues from the 15th and even longer, some of them 1,000-year-old in Afghanistan. So if we want to have our Catholic history as me as a Catholic and John as Catholics, or, you know, we want to have the evangelicals want to make pilgrimages to the Holy Land, you have to take a stand against the Muslim nations, and he's not been willing to do that, and I think that's his biggest weakness. Okay, Simon, you can try to jump in.
I sent you an email earlier today, and it was short and sweet. It wasn't that Obama won. It was that the Republicans threw the thing down the toilet. Do you agree?
Well, yes and no. And let me preface, this is one of my life comments that I make to, as particularly young lawyers and other people who are in competitive businesses like mine. There's two ways to win in life. One is to go out and just outright win, and the other one is to let the other side lose. So it's a time-honored thing to look around and see people that are capable of destroying themselves and let them destroy themselves and enjoy the victory. So, yes, there's a certain element of that, but understand that is one of the most common ways of winning in any sport or any business you're in, is if the other person's self-destructive, hell, they're your best assets, right? And so, yes, I agree with that limitation.
No, to me, the election was there for the Republican Party to, you know, and take it big time. But that they just didn't seem to connect with the popular vote. Are they outdated?
That's my point, Simon, is that, you know, if you don't have to do everything, you can let the other side do whatever it is they're doing and let them do it wrong. And that's basically what the Democrats did at times in this election. They just said, hey, Romney's just doing so much to himself and the party itself is doing so much to itself. We don't really have to do very much, do we? And they sort of sat back and let themselves destruct. And they did.
Okay, here's the other aspect. Everyone seems to think that Mitt Romney isn't really a bad guy. You know, he may wear strange underwear and, you know, be a Mormon and all the rest of it, but, you know, deep down, he's probably not a bad guy. Was he hogtied by the Republican Party?
Oh, absolutely. I'm sure everybody agrees with it. You know, my constant comment is that the Republican Party has been hijacked by fundamentalist religions and the Tea Parties, and the worst offender of all, Grover Norquist, Grover Norquist has never run for office, to, in my recollection, nor done anything in his life other than create this so-called tax pledge, has an inordinate amount of effect and control over our government by making Republicans feel if they don't follow his stupid tax pledge, that they can't be reelected. So they're sort of beholden to him or afraid of him. And guys like that handcuffed Romney, I thought, the whole way.
Sam, your thoughts? I mean, obviously you were a Romney supporter. Do you think
Go ahead, Sam.
Do you think that the Republicans should have backed off and got behind Romney's ideas rather than forcing Romney into a corner to express their ideas?
Well, I supported Mitt Romney because I thought with this looming fiscal cliff coming and that he would be best to handle it than Mr. Obama in the 4 years of just of his policy of wanting to soak the rich. Absolutely, he makes no bones about that. Still puts no spending cuts out there, and if anything, he increases the debt. And he also, I think Romney would have been a better person for that, just from an economic point of view. As far as the social aspect of as Manny pointed out, the Tea Party whack jobs, the fundamentalist whack jobs, and all that, it makes me sick in my stomach about them. They are so far away from what America is, the new fabric of America is, it's terrible. And that's what they chopped them. They never recognized that. So the Democratic Party, David Axelrod, and the people in the media and all that did, and they spanked them hard. I don't think Romney lost. I think Obama kicked the crap out of them. You know what I mean? And I tip my hat. You know, if you guys talk about sports, you know, when I played sports and lost to a superior whether team or whatnot, you know, hey, the coaches called it out. And he went over and congratulated, and the only thing you could do is work that much harder in the off season for the next year. Well, their off season's 4 years long, and they better come up with something. And like I said earlier, you know, I know men, you talk about Ron Paul's foreign policy, and I agree with you at a certain point. But in the same token, when I would really listen to him talk, and he would say to Israel, he never said we were supposed to cut off Israel. He always said, let Israel be Israel. Take the leash off Israel, because Israel, there are times when the Israelis made better fighter planes than some of our companies do, and they were not allowed to sell them to other countries because of the deals between the American government and the foreign aid and all that, which say you can't do that. And, you know, they have to buy from us, and it's things of that nature. So I kind of disagree. I don't think it's meant to be an isolationist. It's to be friends with all countries, and you don't have to worry about everybody trying to get your back. Want to stab you in the back, take your money. I mean, look what's happening right now in the Middle East. Missiles that we rockets from Libya got their way through New Egypt, through the Sinai Peninsula, into the Gaza Strip. The money that probably paid for with American tax dollars, those rockets are being fired at our number one ally in the Middle East, Israel. That's our foreign policy. That's a joke.
Sam, I've got to correct you in one item.
Yeah.
One of the issues that goes on with Israel, and particularly those fighter planes, is, first of all, most of the patents and other items in those airplanes come from purchase of planes from the U.S. So, you know, we have strong feelings about them reusing our patents and selling and competing with us. On the positive side, one of the reasons the airplanes were better is because they took our stuff and then their scientists, to steal a line out of Zebra, their German Jewish scientists, did a better job than ours. And the bottom line to all of it is that, in fact, do you know that they added rearview mirrors to our jet planes? I mean, that is, I thought, was one of the cleverest things I could. I mean, why didn't America think about rearview mirrors on their airplanes? I mean, there were a million things like that. But yes, that's as far as people using our military stuff and shipping it around. We just need to stop giving aid to foreign countries. We need to stop being the corrupts of this world and arming the world. And
oh, I totally agree with you.
And that's the problem, don't you agree?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, like I was just talking about. Yeah, I just I watched the rockets raining down on those poor citizens of Israel, and you know, and I watched I get back to my wife. I spent 18 years in a kibbutz in Israel, so we're three of her nephews were just called up. You know, they're 3,000 to 75,000 troops on the amassed on the Gaza border right now, and you know, she was Skyping her sister last night, and you know, they're very nervous. The sister lives up on the Golan Heights area, and that area is starting to get crazy because the Syrian rebels or the Syrian military is actually lobbing shells once in a while into the Golan Heights that had been relatively quiet for 15 years because of the iron fist rule of Assad. So Israel is, you know, all, you know, around it right now. It's got all sorts of issues dealing with, you know, the new Egypt, the new Syria, the civil war Syria, the of course Gaza and whatnot, and it hits home in my house because I have three nephews I never met who are who've been called up, and meanwhile my son's on some mission. I won't know if he comes back for Thanksgiving. You know, flying all sorts of supplies and everything all over the world. I don't even know where he is right now, and it is kind of hard. You know, it's worrying some because of how violent the world is right now, and United States government is, and our government, our businesses, our policies, bombing everybody about it. You know, and yes, I agree with you, Manny.
Yeah. John. You know, and if I have, I have several cousins, two of them are dentists in Tel Aviv, who I haven't met, and their mother just dropped me a note basically telling me she just got back from Israel and wish she could bring her children back with her. But, you know, they're getting quite old now. They're in their 40s, so, you know. But, and they're British by birth, by the way. They moved, they grew up in London, and they moved there, and yet they seem to be willing to sit there and weather this storm. It's really amazing.
John, you've been incredibly quiet, which is unusual for you. The Israel situation is quickly disintegrating into war. What should our position be? Should we support them or should we walk away?
Well, I have a quick response to that. But first I want to say regarding Manny citing Rami's causes for the loss, I'd like to say, Manny, astute observation. Everything you stated was true. Excluding the facts.
Oh, good. I'm glad I didn't have any of those.
Resulting in that 47% comment he made and painted him as a rapacious, evil capitalist. I think that's why he lost. Nothing to do with any extraneous influence.
As I'd like to think about it.
How about the, helpful abortion comments by Aiken?
Romney asked Aiken to step down and not run, Simon. I don't know if you're aware of that.
Oh, I'm perfectly aware of it.
So he disavowed that comment. If people held him responsible, shame on them.
Right.
Well, I think that people do. And
he made
and
a 47% comment.
But wait a minute, John. And the reason I think that people do is because of the Republican Party's perception of being anti-abortion. And it just sort of raises that. And I agree, Romney, who was, you know, a pro-choice for so many years, got tainted by it. That's just the reality. The same way I think that Obama gets tainted with things that he hasn't done also because he's a Democrat. I mean, it's just part of what life is.
Think of all the mileage people got out of that 47% comment. Come on.
Oh,
But he did a terrible job defending him too.
It didn't matter anybody else influencing him. That comment alone hurt him mightily.
But he didn't defend himself. But John, he did a terrible job defending himself. If you get caught saying something, and if you're just saying that to raise money, that's terrible. I thought he should have been out there defending himself. I thought he mouthed off the right way about Benghazi, and then he backed off about it. And then he had a great chance to do something with a debate, and he didn't do anything with it. I don't know what happened to him.
He has to hold himself responsible for the loss, not Karl Rove or anybody else. Rove or Norquist.
He's the head of the ticket. It's his responsibility. He's the head of his. You have to be. I would expect him to be the guy. Hey, I'm a CEO. I mean, that's his attitude. That was what he tried to sell up to America on. If the company goes bankrupt, don't blame the workers. Blame me.
Right.
And so it was his campaign. And if he listened to Karl Rove and Dick Morris, then that's his problem. Or he didn't listen to or if he had nothing but yes men and yes women around him, that's his problem.
Well, they would have told him, don't make that comment, or several others, so.
But maybe that, but I don't think he did make them, and he made those, and they were taped and all that. It's just like Obama made serious comments when he was running in 08 with about the Jeremiah Wright and some other things, and he defended himself about it. And then, of course, you can always say, well, the media helped him out. And yes, the media is biased a little towards the left, but at the time he made those comments, he was running against the Clinton machine. And he defended himself, and his team did a great job at defending themselves about those comments that he was caught on tape making about certain things, the radical statements that he made. And he defended himself about it, and he got away with it. Romney didn't. He just he would just pop up, say something, and then disappear for a couple of days.
Uh-huh.
And I blame Mitt Romney. I mean, he did a better job than McCain, but then he still got hijacked by the fundamentalist whack jobs in the party. Man, he just made a great point. Even if Romney was pro-choice and he didn't back off from it, those stupid comments by Murdoch and Aiken and the others were going to stick to him like glue, because the perception is the Republican Party is anti-abortion, and that's it. And that's one of the reasons that they lost. They lost all the single women votes out there, as opposed to changing with it. And and that's just, in my opinion, that's what's going to happen. That's what happened to him. I won't want to.
Many, I have a theory. In 2016, Sam is going to be voting Democrat.
I will if the Republicans don't put up a good candidate, or if there's not a third-party candidate.
I joke with Sam that I've been looking for a reason to vote Republican for a lot of years, and they haven't given me one in a lot of years, so I haven't voted since the last time I voted Republican was for Ronald Reagan, and they haven't really fielded a candidate. I mean, the Bush was a terrible candidate. The father was. I like him. He's another guy who I really like a lot personally, but I wouldn't want Mr. Wishy-Washy running my country either. And to me, that's one of the problems here. And, John, I don't agree. I pillar, Romney for him, what I would call changing his position constantly, which he's done forever and ever. And I don't care what you say. You cannot go through politics and change your position as often as he did. It catches up with you.
One of the things I used to cringe when Romney said it, and I'm glad, and it kind of became a non-issue after the Supreme Court ruled Obamacare was legal, was Romneycare. I mean, I couldn't believe that. This guy literally kind of was the blueprint, maybe was the blueprint, for the national health care plan. And here he is going around for a whole year to campaigning that he's going to, get rid of it. And now then he's going to keep some of the good things that are in it. Well, if there's some good things in it, why don't we find the good things and stay with that and change the bad things that are in it? I just used to cringe when he would talk about that. And his opponent just annihilated him in the Republican primaries about that. And that stuff was used against him during the general and whatnot. And that's what happens when you're running. Next year, in 4 years, Simon, you'll see 17 people, Democrats, running. There'll be 18 Republicans running. And whichever two emerge are both going to be beaten and bloodied by the primaries. And some of the things they say, or missteps or misquotes that they make, or some things that their opponents say in the primaries, are going to hurt them in the general election.
I'll give you a prediction. I have no clue who the next president will be, but it won't be Joe Biden.
Oh, no, he'll be, not only will he not be elected, but he's too old. No, you know, I still believe Hillary's going to run, and Hillary will be the force to beat. And I know from certain insiders, one of them John knows and does work with over a period of time, exactly where she is about it. And part of this is she needs a rest. And after she's away and away from the administration for a while and gets a chance to rest, recharge her batteries, she's going to make a decision. But it's my belief that that's what her decision's going to be, because everyone except her husband is encouraging her. And I think that Hillary's probably going to move in that direction. And I personally cannot think of anything that will gall my Republican friends, including John, because John now claims he's a Republican.
Right.
You know, hang on, everyone. We'll see how that works. And, we'll see where it goes. But, yeah, we have a long way to go. There's as Sam likes to say, there are a million world events that can occur. There's a million things that can go wrong. There's scandals afoot. There's traps. We're a long way away from really thinking that. And I guess in the Republican sense, Romney was always going to be the logical choice for this election, because, after all, when you looked at the splinters from the last election, he was probably the only one that had a chance. But I don't see anyone in the Republican Party makes me jump up and say, this guy's got a real chance at it, and all he has to do is work on it for a while, and he'll get there. Does anyone see anybody that they think has a great chance of getting a nomination later?
Oh, I think we have to hand the baton off to John.
Simon, as I said, my predictions aren't very accurate.
Like your football predictions? And
Is Pete Wilson still available?
Is who?
Pete Wilson.
Isn't he dead?
No, I saw him a few years ago.
Wow.
Well, he might be dead now.
he looked in good health. I said hi to him. But, Simon, let me answer quickly on the Middle East. Thanks a lot to the administration, props for the Arab Spring and the ousting of Mubarak and Gaddafi. Things are going real well, just as planned.
John, they were going, whether it was that week, the next.
Oh, of course, Manny. Jumped to his defense.
I'm not coming to his defense. I'm just saying that when you deal with the Arab nations, you're dealing with the inevitable.
Mubarak and Gaddafi were still in power, the Middle East wouldn't be in flames.
Well, by the way, I might say that I was a lot happier with Saddam Hussein than the other choices, but yet you thought it was essential to overthrow Saddam Hussein, which cost us our national treasury and has created a nightmare that, among other things, has permanently tainted the Republican Party.
Yeah, he was an ally of terrorism and used chemical weapons on his own people, of course.
So what? So is everyone else in the Middle East. Who is?
I didn't see Mubarak and Gaddafi doing that. They were our allies. Hussein wasn't, Manny.
Gaddafi became...
Boy, John, I really...
Wait a minute, John. I'm not letting this go by. I missed being on Pan Am 105 by 1 week. And
that
was
years ago. I know, Lockerbie.
Oh, yeah, well, you know.
When he got rid of his weapons after...
toppled
Saddam.
So now he's a good guy?
And became our ally. You know that's true.
Hey, became our ally after we killed one of his children in a bombing.
Well, that
yeah, Reagan dropped right.
Too.
It's a sad day in hell when the likes of Muammar Gaddafi are your allies.
And it's a sad day in hell when John Perry, of everyone I know, starts talking about him as if he's some kind of valuable asset to the United States.
See,
the guy's
just
a bomb murderer.
There would be a conflagration in the Middle East if they were still in power, and Israel wouldn't be threatened like this if the Muslim Brotherhood weren't controlling Egypt.
Well, I can tell you that every one of my friends, my relatives there, have said to me for a long time, these guys don't live forever, and sooner or later they're going to go, because no one can be a despot that long without somebody killing them. And when they do, we're going right back to where we were. And guess what? They were right. Because that's what's happened.
You know what? You know, one of the things, I don't know if anybody's been watching it. If you go on YouTube, you can see Israeli videos of the, and many were talking about how they've taken some of our planes and made them better, some of our weapons and made them better. Their anti-rocket rockets. I don't know what they call it, the Iron Dome defense or something.
Right.
It's incredible when you see the rockets. They're firing, intercepting the rockets that are coming from the Gaza. It's a great invention. It's helping them, and they're gonna now that that's working. I think that's given them the incentive to go in there and make sure not one more rocket comes out of that Gaza Strip and threatens. The whole southern part of Israel is shut down. People living in bomb shelters. You know, that's another thing people don't realize. All we see of the poor, I feel bad for the poor Palestinians caught in the crossfire, but they need to overthrow Hamas. But that's because they don't have bomb shelters. The Israelis don't get hurt by all these rockets that no one knows where they're going to land because they're in bomb shelters with sirens going off. You know, I mean, they protect their people. The Palestinians, Hamas, they let the people just sit out there. You know, there's no bomb shelters for them. There's no air raid sirens. There's nothing.
Because they don't care.
Right, they don't care. And if they'd rather spend more money, time, and effort hiding their rockets than they do protecting their people.
Well, yeah, because people in the Arab nations are like fodder, and I can't wait for you to finish the book, The Source, and you'll see what I'm talking about.
I just started it.
Yeah, you know, this whole concept of everybody there, you know, and why they never win a war and why they're never going to beat Israel in a war is just laid out so clearly by Mishner in his book. And guess what? I read the book in 1967, just before the June War, and it's just as accurate today as it was when I read the book then. My friends went into a panic when the June War broke out. And, you know, and I said to them, don't worry, the Arabs won't last a week. And they looked at me like, you're crazy. How can you say that? And I said, well, just go read The Source. Because Mishner lays out all the reasons why they will never win. And he's been right so far. And they're just a bunch of selfish, greedy oafs who think of nothing but themselves, and their inability to unite on almost anything is their undoing. And, John, back to that. If you go back, 5,000 years of Arab history before they were even Muslims, they were attacking Europe. They were doing the same thing. Where do you think the story of the 300 Spartans comes from? It certainly wasn't because Greece attacked the Arab nations and suddenly they responded. I mean, this is
Arabs. Many, they were Persians.
Well, please. Excuse me.
Yeah, they were trying to sell their rugs, right, John?
Yeah, right. You know, John, you should live in Beverly Hills for a while. Do you think that one person of Muslim descent in Beverly Hills refers themselves as Muslims? They refer to themselves as Persians.
That's right.
They don't ever want to be called Muslims.
They're not Arabs. You know that. It's the Persian Empire.
Right. Darius and the Motley Group. And guess what? Every century or so, they attack the underbelly of Europe. And, let's talk about the Turks. Oh, let's talk about the Moors. Let's talk about their occupation of Spain for a few hundred years. I mean, how far down the list do you have to go, John, to realize this is a warlike species who just basically starts acts of war with random interruptions in history and attack anyone that has anything to do with Europe, and they are all of our sworn enemies, and at some point we got to do something about it.
How about Hannibal Barca crossing the Alps in 216 in the Punic War with Rome?
Yeah, well, you know, having been over the Alps in a car, I couldn't even imagine what a shitty trip that was in an elephant. You know, and John, you've never bothered to go to Europe, but anyone of our listeners who's been to southern France and made a trip over there, I've driven in some exotic sports cars and didn't feel particularly comfortable. And if you watch some of these movies shot there, you just kind of cringe at these guys, like some of the Bond films when they race over there. Oh, man, it's insanity.
Penny, I'm one up on you because I visited Europe vicariously through Anthony Bourdain.
Oh, you did.
John, is it true that you have not actually ever been out of the state of California?
No, John got his life lessons in Milwaukee and sees, you know, and views life through a Milwaukee beer bottle, and that may be some of his vision problems.
Born in Wisconsin.
Yeah.
You've gone as far as Wisconsin?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. And anyone who's been there knows how far that is.
I don't go anywhere that I'm not paid to be.
And, you know, it's funny because, John, you criticize Europe all the time, and every time you do it, I go, you've never been there. Europe is this fabulously beautiful place to live, and the people are wonderful. The food is outrageously good. You know, one of the things that always impressed me about Europe is, take Germany and Austria, for example. You go into a public restroom in a gas station, and you could literally eat off the floors. They are so spick and span and well-kept and so carefully taken care of to make sure that everybody who travels through there has this opportunity. And yet they do things so much better than America does in so many different ways. And besides, you're not liable to get mugged half as much in Europe as you do here. And, you know, yet you criticize them all the time. And, you know, you're born abroad, Simon. Don't you find Europe absolutely wonderful, provided you're out of the United Kingdom?
I love to travel. And I think the only way you can understand the world is by spending time in the world. And I'm sorry, John, Wisconsin doesn't quite make it.
It doesn't broaden my horizon, Simon?
No.
All it's done is get you into a world full of Snickers bars. But no, I'm serious about it, John. And especially for you, John is probably the best read person I know in overall history. And I'll give you that compliment, John. You read as much history and know as much history as anyone I know who doesn't teach the subject.
Thanks, man.
And yet at the same time, you're cheating yourself. I mean, I'll give an example. Ash and I were in northeast Italy in a little town called Ancona. I bet you've never heard of it. It's below Venice, and Ancona was the location where the Roman fleet, going back, probably several hundred years B.C., had kept their navy because it's an insulated port on the Adriatic. A just fabulous place. Ash and I wanted to see this bridge. The bridge was built in somewhere around, I think my recollection, it was somewhere around 325 B.C. is my recollection. So we spent about a half hour driving over bridges, just looking everywhere for it. And we're standing there, and I got out of the car, and I'm on this bridge, and we're looking around going, where the hell could it be? It's supposed to be right here. Well, you know, all of a sudden I look down at the bridge I'm standing on and realize the bridge has got this hand-carved thing that says 325 B.C. And so people are still driving over every one of these landmarks every single day you're there. And that's one of the things that's so extraordinary about it. But if you don't walk the Appian Way and you don't do some of these things, or if particularly the Vatican Library, anyone who's ever been there, there are thousands of years. One of the things anyone who's ever been in the Vatican Library will tell you, that when you walk in the waiting room, is the walls on either side are lined with murals starting at about, somewhere around 1400 B.C., and they're the maps of Italy about every 100 years. They're about 12 feet tall and 8 feet wide, hand-painted frescoes that were relocated there that shows the growth of Italy from the first settlers coming in from Greece all the way down the line. And it's just you have to see it to really sense the antiquity. So get me off this rant about traveling and history. John,
okay.
You need to see the world.
All right. I'm going to get you off it. Obama is right now on Air Force One, and he is going to be the first U.S. president to visit Burma, or as the reigning army guys would prefer you to call it, Myanmar. Are we sending the wrong message? You know, I had a reporter in Burma. I never knew his real name, but he went to great lengths to keep his real name safe. He would concoct a story, put it on a thumb drive, go to an internet cafe, and then send the file to me. The very last time I talked with him, he had discovered CNN and iReport, or whatever they call it. That was 6 years ago. I'm pretty certain he's dead. But he had good connections with the government. He wasn't part of it. I got the impression that his wife was the daughter of a big official. I mean, should we be going to Burma?
Well, who wants to start that? Because I have strong feelings that, yes, you have to effectuate change, and you can't do it putting your head in the sand. And sooner or later, you've got to get out there, and you've got to confront other cultures and deal with these issues, and you're not going to make any progress sitting at home. And that's the bottom line to it all. And yes, a lot of these are very imperfect situations, and a lot of them we don't support, but that doesn't mean we can't do it. I mean, we go to Russia. I mean, I don't know anyone I support less than Russia. But we still do, don't we?
Oh,
anyone
we
else
do.
Have a thought?
Go ahead, Sam.
Well, I heard he was going because he needed some aftershave, Burma aftershave. Remember that?
Yeah.
Was that a bad joke? Okay.
No, though, unless someone drove the old countryside and saw those old, remember the Burma Shave signs that gave you like three words every half mile and they had to keep reading it through? Is that before your time?
Yep.
Yeah, they were pretty putrid, but they were common.
But let me say this.
Yeah, no, I don't have I guess you asked Simon the question, should he be going to Burma, given all that stuff? And I mean, the President of the United States, he's in contact with everything. He gave a statement about, that Air Force One is probably better equipped to handle things than most other nations' capitals in regards to the communications and getting things done. So it's not like he couldn't take care of any crisis that happened. And he's already spoken out on the biggest thing that's happening right now, which is the conflict, I'm going to call it not a conflict, it's the war between the Israelis and Hamas. And he said Israel has the right to defend itself. So, and he's going to visit Burma. I mean, that's the president. He's the boss. He can do that. If Romney would have got elected and was going on a trip to Ireland, that would be great. That's what they do. And I think the more you reach out, the better. I mean, at least he's, he'll come back with some, he'll probably get some, what did he get in Burma? What do they have?
They have absolutely nothing.
No, it's not. They made the best tea there during the colonial times. They have rubber and actually a lot of resources.
But Sam, what would you say if his first overseas trip was to North Korea?
That'd be a good idea.
That's not a bad idea. Thank you, man. You stole my thunder. Look, I'd like to see him go to Cuba and open up trade to Cuba. I mean, and some things of that nature. I mean, I think, look, Nixon went to China. I mean, they've all had the, that's what they do. The president runs them. Every day, congressmen, congresswomen, senators go on these junkets all over the world. So what's the big deal if the president goes on one? I mean, I don't know why he picked Burma. There's nothing there, or natural resources, or something. So be it. Maybe he wanted to be the first president to go over there and do some things, and that was important to him and his legacy and all that he's building and all that. But I don't see a problem with it, and I just think the more you reach out, I think foreign policy wise is the best thing. I know. Who cares if Burma is an ally if there's a war? But you know, but they're not going to really send a lot of troops and weapons to outside. But better to be a friend with them than not be a friend with them.
Well, also as Burma starts to come in, to use an expression into the world fold in terms of how it is as a country, there's no question that, you know, if they're going to be an emerging market, and that every American corporation encourages the president to take these steps because, after all, they want to do business with these countries, which was, I thought, one of the problems when the Libya crisis that is hurting this administration is they catered too much to the American corporations who just cannot wait to get in there and conduct business. And, you know, so for better or worse, the president does have some commitment to these major people who supply funds and other things for election, because basically, why do they support him? Why do they give him this money? Right?
Right. John, you must be chomping at the bit.
Well, this might surprise you guys, but I completely disagree.
Oh, no.
Wow, I was worried for a moment.
What about Burma?
Let me say, first and foremost, I'm no Burmese expert. The extent of my knowledge is limited to Merrill's Marauders, Youth Aunt, and Earl Grey tea, Simon. So I think it's all about messaging and packaging.
Incidentally, there is nothing wrong with Earl Grey tea.
I know.
I rather like it.
From what I hear. And anyway, it's all about messaging and packaging with this administration. I don't believe anything coming out of it. I think he wants to appear above the fray with the problems in the Middle East. And obviously, I think he should be concentrating on that and not gallivanting around the world at this time when we could be in the process of a major war erupting.
Well, what is it you want him to concentrate on? I don't know.
Oh, man, even the French president is saying he'll negotiate peace.
Well, let him.
Okay, that's what I think.
I mean,
I don't understand
the only remaining superpower. But to be gallivanting around the world sends the message that he's unengaged or disengaged, and I think that's what he wants to do. So
go
out and have a good time. Meanwhile, the Middle East burns. Maybe he'll win another war.
Israel can take care of Israel. It's not like Israel, they got this great defense thing that everyone thought that they've only lost 3 citizens, considering, you know, and that's terrible, of course.
Now,
anybody
gets killed. This?
But
do you really think
if Bush or give me any Republican president was a Republican as president was right now, they would have canceled the trip knowing that Israel was kicking the shit out of the Hamas? No, he could monitor it from Air Force One. He's got people all over. He's got the American embassy on and all that, and the satellites and the drones and this.
Plus, he was monitoring Benghazi.
Well, I think he screwed up. Yeah, absolutely. I'm not going to give the guy a pass on everything. But when he does something, you know, I'm the type of guy. You know, the guy does something right. You have to applaud him, whether it's a Democrat or a Republican. I think we got to get past all this thing. He can't do anything right because he's a Democrat.
He's changed in these last 2 weeks.
Not going to change. I'm just the way it is. Good is good. You know, when he does something good, I'm not going to say, oh yeah, well, I know all the bad that you did. I mean, like, get changed the past. He has said the right thing. He said Israel has the right to defend himself. And now I'm going to Burma. I mean,
what's the message to send to the world?
I just don't think he supports Israel, and he's still the president of the United States, and he's trying, as Manny says, I'm sure, and I never even thought about it, so he said it, that there are people who want to do business in Burma, and they probably lobbied him, and it's been set in motion for probably many months to go. However, I'll give the guy the benefit of the doubt. You probably won't like this, John, but if a hurricane would have hit Sandy now, he would have canceled his trips for that.
No, I don't think
he would have canceled his trip for that.
The other one hit. He did a 4-hour photo op and went campaigning.
Come on, John. Give it a rest. You know, in every business, people delegate. And the President of the United States has to delegate. And you have to have some faith in the people who you delegate to.
Penny, is your knee jerking right now?
Pardon me?
Is your knee jerking right now?
No, but my patience with you is a little bit. It's like you've adopted this policy just for the purpose of disagreeing right now. And
no,
I don't
it's common sense. I'm not going to suspend it because he won the election.
Well, I'm not suspending because he won the election. When Nixon went to China, he wasn't exactly in everybody's good stead, but we all realized
you really
the right
think
thing
it sends a good message to the world. He's out in Burma when the Middle East is imploding.
The Middle East isn't exploding. Right now, basically we have is a situation where Israel is starting to exterminate more Arabs. What's the big deal with that?
Okay, here's the big question. What's wrong with Israel, basically eradicating the Gaza Strip?
Well, no, really, Simon, you're not going to get any sympathy. First of all, I mean, we all know the history of Palestine. It didn't exist until the Arabs decided to make it exist. Worst of all, Palestine exists for the sole purpose of torturing Israel. They don't want it and never wanted anybody from that area to ever inhabit their. Syria doesn't want them. Nobody wants them. If they really wanted them, they would have adopted them long ago. And if they wanted to stop this, they would have long ago. But no, you talk about a proxy war. Oh, my God, this is the ultimate proxy war in the history of the world, is the constant use of the Arabs, whatever poor, dumb, stupid people are presently living in the Palestinian area and in the Strip, are using them as tools to fight Israel. Gosh, they really care a lot about those people, don't they? So if they don't care about them, why should we? I don't care about them.
So why should we be supporting Israel? I'm not talking about troops on the ground, because we don't have any, at least not that I'm aware of. But, why should we fund it? Obviously, we don't have any friends in the region other than Israel.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Simon, you can't really be serious. The reason that every country, and England included, is support them is look at this history. If the Arabs had control of the Suez Canal, do you really think that they would be allowing traffic through? Because they've tried. There was times in the 50s when they used that as a tool to try to stop Israel and a lot of other things. So that area has always been a tool. Historically, the issue with the Arabs was anything that came out of the East, particularly tea before 1492 and its subsequent changing of the map, had to pass through Arab territories, for which they would charge double, triple, and all sorts of other taxes on it, and basically made their living taxing your goods that were going to Europe. And as you drift through periods of time through the various Crusades, that was one of the reasons the Crusades started, is they choked all sorts of trade from the opposite parts of the world, and it became virtually impossible for Europe to function with the interference of the Arab countries who were doing it intentionally because ultimately they wanted to take control of Europe. And guess what? Ultimately, they attacked Europe, and ultimately they swept through North Africa, around through Spain. And if I recall, that's why El Cid is so famous, as he defeated the Moors and in northern Spain. And then there's the Battle of Tours. I mean, I could list them all in history for a long time, but the root of it is the history shows if you don't check the Arab nation at the border, they will attack you. So what makes you think, with the lunatics that we've seen running the Arab countries in recent decades, that they won't attack the United States or some other country? So you might as well stop them where they are. So Israel, in part, is that last bastion. And for those people younger than us who did not have family die in European countries as I did and lose a number of relatives I did during that time, none of which I ever met, we owe them a debt, and we owe the Jews of Europe, the Lithuanians, the Russians who died, and everyone else, we owe them the duty to stop this kind of advances by any country in the world, I don't care who it is. And right now it's the Arabs. And anyone who thinks otherwise got to take a long, hard look at history, because this is a very, very serious issue. And get me off the ramp, or the rant.
Okay, I absolutely agree with you. But I keep hearing things, you know, stories that by 2020, the U.S. is going to be, you know, energy independent. In fact, I even read a story that we became a net exporter of energy last year. So, you know, why should we spend billions and billions of dollars in the Middle East? Why don't we just let them find it out?
Well, look, the last time we decided to do that was 1955. Do you remember what happened? If anyone who doesn't, Egypt crossed the border and they were going to wipe out Israel once and for all. And much to everybody's shock around the world, Israel started beating the crap out of Egypt and looked like they were going to go across the Suez into Egypt and destroy Egypt once and for all. Does anyone know what Khrushchev did? Khrushchev threatened to drop a bomb on London if they did not stop. Right. And therein started this problem, is that there's always been a country, usually Russia now, that supports the Arabs in some ways because they make money off them and they survive off this conflict because, guess what, the Russian economy can't balance its budget without selling these war materials to countries just like them. So they can't afford to have this war end because if it ends, my God, how will they balance the payments?
One of the other things the Russians have is they're not selling like to Egypt, and Syria is their big buyer, and I'm sure there's some other countries in the Middle East, Manny.
Iraq. How about Syria. What do you think they get all these weapons from?
Right, that's where they're getting them from. But Egypt, who couldn't be a buyer because they're looking for money, and they have to get the money from us, and I'm sure that they're not allowed to buy weapons from Russia. Otherwise, you know, that's going to be a mess. So I totally agree with you. I think, and Simon, what you say is, you know, right now, I've been, you know, monitoring stuff and looking over there in my work. They've never heard such total hawkish talk coming from all aspects of the Israelis. There's no peace movements like the work, like when they had that war in Lebanon, that was a disaster, and a couple other things. I mean, these people are sick and tired of having rockets rain down on them, and I think they're going to level Gaza. They don't want it. I mean, I don't blame them. I mean, you guys, where we all live, I could not imagine when I go on YouTube, or you're on the beach of Tel Aviv, or Manny, you're on the beaches with Peter on South Florida, and someone's raining rockets on you, or even John, you, or me, or whatnot. That'd be amazing. I mean, you think about that. I mean, you know, every day to have to live like that and shutting down an economy, and what's the reason why? And I still can't understand why the Palestinian people don't overthrow this terrorist leadership and look at the way they live. They live on mud floors. They don't live that well. They live on arms from the other nation. Look at what Israel's done in that desert.
Let me give you an example. We have the same problem in the Deep South. The Deep South spends all of its time raising children that are bigots. And there was a wonderful, wonderful book and story about the son of the guy who killed Medgar Evers and how he turned into a racist because his father trained him to be a racist all of his life and how it took him most of his life to get over it and finally turn in his father. And, you know, you look at this and you look how children are indoctrinated to hate other races And that's where it comes from. I think anti-Semitism is a classic example of something that is fostered and nurtured to perpetuate it for as long as time goes. So here we have the greatest example of this, which is to have a, you know, basically a race spend all this time to trying to destroy another race, stopping at absolutely nothing. And you can't do that. We cannot allow that. And I don't care whether it's because of, you know, it's in the Deep South or the Arabs or whatever. We cannot allow our lives to be run by these levels of bigots.
Yeah, I mean, Manny, I mean, I could not imagine a woman, a Palestinian woman who's treated like dirt, that basically have no rights. You know, am I right? I mean, they're violently treated. And they, right across the border, there's liberty, there's education, there's, they could be. Why would they want to live like that? Why wouldn't they want to get over to the Israeli and work and live and get educated and, you know, have all, I just don't understand. Instead, they choose to live,
wait a minute, John. Arab women don't choose to live like that. It's forced upon them by Arab men. Come on.
But why can't they see to get out of there? They have to be able to see if they can get out of there. Or are the Arab men that total control of their everyday culture and life that these women can't see a magazine, they can't see a television show, they can't see a newspaper, they can't talk to others? I mean, that's what I don't understand. Of the children, why would they want to be the kids, the teenagers? Why would, I guess, because they've had 17 years of that you have to go kill the Jews, beaten into you, that's the only way you know? I mean, I'm agreeing with you about if that's all they know, that's all they know.
Yeah, I always remember the line of Noah Coward who once said women should be beaten regularly, and that's what they do in the Arab countries. They just beat their women and terrorize them, and they live in total fear of everything in their life. And by the way, I've seen enough Middle Eastern couples here in the United States to tell you that applies a great deal to them too. They're just frightened to death of their husbands or culture. I have a Middle Eastern neighbor whose brother literally runs her life. I mean, it just, that's their culture, guys, and that's how they do this, and it's just really horrible.
Sam, I honestly don't know where you're coming from. Reality, if you were to spend some time in a large city, you know, that has an Arab population, women are very much second-class citizens.
Oh, that's being nice. They're slightly above dogs on a leash.
And for the life of me, in the year 2013, coming to 2013, I find that, I believe you guys, of course, but I just find that hard to believe that they can't even throw that yoke off and just go and see that with modern technology and all that, the grass is green on the other side, girls, and you're not going to get beaten. And they probably welcome you with open arms over there. Because, I mean, their culture is so whacked, they teach little boys and little girls, wrap them up in bombs, take them over and blow themselves up on buses. You don't see the Israelis doing that to go over to the Middle East, as they're sending the little 7-year-old boys or whatever, teenager boys or girls, get bar mitzvahed and strap on the dynamite vest and go over to the Gaza Strip and blow yourself up in an Arab market.
Talking about, you know, blowing people up. We're talking about, you know, humanity.
Sam, back to the culture for a moment.
Okay.
There's a story that was overly covered in the press, and I thought overly covered because they were trying to make the point that you're talking about this poor girl who was shot in the face and tried to kill in Afghanistan because she wanted to go to school, and their feelings about women going to school are such that when they didn't kill her, even though there's got all this world attention, they said they're going to keep going until they kill her. I mean, that's who they are, is they will kill, if a 5-year-old demanded to go to school, they would kill him. And that's just the way they are. So why would you think that they would feel anything less about somebody else or a particular...
I don't know, I guess maybe it was total naivete on me then. I mean, I'm guilty of that.
It's hard for you to think ill of people in the world and say that this is a culture. They can be guilty of such widespread lunacy. I mean, it is lunacy. And yet the truth is they are. This is who they are. And that's why we're all dealing with them so severely, and why if I say if they don't care about losing one of them, why should we? If they place no value on life and willing to put a six-year-old into a bomb and send them off if they could get one smart enough to find his target, then if they don't care, why should we care about them? Can you someone tell me why we should care about them?
I think we should ask John.
Why we should care about him?
Yeah. Why? You know the Who song, Why Should I Care?
I think our humanity demands it, Manny.
Our humanity?
Yeah.
So you want us in war to have a higher level of humanity than our enemy?
Yeah, of course. Otherwise, what are we fighting for?
Survival. War causes rules to change and for the period of time in war, and there's never been a humane war in the history of the world, and we certainly didn't fight them either when we had to. You wish you could, but that's not reality, and we're dealing with a.
Well, Manny, you're not going to win hearts and minds with that attitude.
Well, you're never going to win the hearts and minds.
Oh, I disagree. I'm hopeful.
You're hopeful?
I think we get some corporations in there and provide jobs. The Palestinians' unemployment rate's over 50%.
That comment's exactly why George Bush is in hiding and people laugh at him as a village idiot. That's the type of crap that Bush and Cheney and the other multiple
idiots. Oh, it's better just to bomb them, right?
No, it's better not to have any involvement with them at all. But when you have involvement with them, you cannot avoid the reality that these people don't value life and that you're trying to have a rational resolution to a problem with a group of people that don't want a rational resolution. They want to keep killing and killing and hoping that Americans and Jews and other people get tired of it and just throw in the towel and go somewhere else. And that's their how they try to solve their problems, is kill you and try and outlast you. John, are you the only person I've ever heard who disagrees with some of these really basic concepts about how the Arab countries run?
I'm not willing to just say people should be randomly slaughtered. I never will.
Well, I'm not saying people should be randomly slaughtered. I'm just saying to you how, you have to deal with the reality of the when it comes to the Arabs, this is how they fight wars. You can't win their hearts and minds. In fact, I'm not even sure that any of them have any minds.
Come on, Manny.
It's not been proven. No. I mean, by and large, the people who run the Arab countries are people who don't care and consider human beings just pawn in their game, a political game. This has been true of the Arab countries, since time immemorial.
So do you think the 50% unemployment rate weighs into their decision-making, that they have no hope for a future?
I don't think any of them care. They want to live in this... they've been taught that their life should be lived according to the Quran in this rustic, no-frills life, because after all, if you have any frills, it might seduce you into a Western lifestyle, which is the prime reason they're against us, is because they feel that our lifestyle is seductive and that their occupants of their country will be converted over to ice cream television and what appears on television and how it's going to corrupt and destroy their society. And I know that's the belief of a significant number of fundamentalist Christian parents, too, if I'm not mistaken. I mean, that's the problem here, is they are never going to be... And by the way, we might have had less problems with the Arabs if we had not decided to go into their country at various times and basically do exactly that, control how the countries are run, basically... control their politics and try to control everything to steal all their oil. So over a period of about 40-odd years of raping and pillaging by the Arm and Hammers and other people of this world, we basically created an environment where they hate us.
Well,
so,
when we do have pro-Western leaders, they're continually savaged in the press here, and something worse you know, when they're westernizing their people, something worse comes in, and a great example of that's the Shah.
Uh-huh.
And now we're
Oh, come on, John.
The
Shah is decades ago.
He wasn't trying to help anybody. He was a butcher. He was a pawn of the oil companies.
And now look at them. They're back in the Middle Ages in a lot of places.
Well, sure, they will be. And guess what? That's where they want to be, and that's what they're doing. And they will continue to want to be in there because that's the life they want. They don't
Maybe we could have supported the Shah, huh?
Well, we did support the Shah, just that people got so sick of the Shah and sick of American support, because that's one of the reasons why we did not survive after the Shah left, is we left a history of dishonesty. John, I told you this story. One of the sad parts of history is we were responsible for deposing the prime minister of Iran in the 50s and replacing him with someone who unfortunately was discovered later to be a CIA agent. So, you know, I mean, this, you got to think about this a little bit.
Yeah, I am. I think it's...
You know, we have done such a terrible job of doing these things in our history that we've let greedy corporations make these decisions for us. And what they've done, essentially, is left a wake behind them that the American people pay for.
Yeah, but now you're supporting the reckless slaughter of people.
John, hold up just for a second. All right, name one Middle Eastern country that likes us.
I haven't seen the poll, Simon, but I gotta believe maybe United Arab Emirates, Kuwait,
the Saudis, maybe.
I don't know. Probably some Jordanians do. I don't know.
Saudi government likes us, but their people don't. Americans are a great risk in Saudi Arabia now. But John, no, better still, someone list any kind of democracy or benevolent government in the history of the Arab countries, and don't tell me Ataturk was benevolent.
Well, he westernized Turkey.
You mean he brought him out of the Dark Ages? Yeah.
Well, I mean, I do have a lot of respect for. By the way, his name was Mustafa Kemal.
That's correct. But who the hell would know what I'm talking about if I referred to him by his name?
Yeah, of course. He was a visionary, and he brought Turkey back from World War One.
I agree, but my point to you is that these are countries, as I keep pointing out, where their sole goal is to basically destroy and warlike. And by the way, throw in another one too, because I make this joke too, that the Arabs are as guilty as the Chinese of population control, but they do it with violence. And they literally do. If you look at the amount of deaths in the Arab countries in the last 100 years, then what you're going to see is a pattern that effectively has kept their population under control.
Let me ask, since we discussed this topic more than the Obama administration.
There's nothing wrong with a good public stoning.
Simon, what else you want to talk about?
When are we going to go on the Twinkies? When are we going to start talking about the run on Twinkies in this country?
Okay, you have piqued my interest.
But before that, I want to make a quick comment. I sent everybody an article. I've been watching this unrest in Ireland because the rest of my family lives in Ireland, which is I basically consider it my home country. My father was born there, even though he was a British citizen. He was born there at the turn of the century. And I am just appalled at how far this abortion issue has gone and the facts that are surrounded. And I'm only raising this because we've had long discussions about abortion in this country and the effects that it has and how it affected the Republicans' run for office. And they should take a look at this and accept that women around the world are up in arms. And if they don't see that out of this, I just don't know what anyone can say to them at some point. And, Simon, you spent time in Ireland, I'm sure, when you were younger. I mean, it's pretty hard not to living in Great Britain. And this is a cloistered Catholic country that's been insulated from almost about everything. And yet, here we have women willing to stand up to their government. I've never seen that before there. Have you?
No, I haven't. But I need to put this in some, I'll tell the story. There's a lady. She's pregnant. She has pains. Things aren't going well. Eventually, she heads to the hospital. They go, oh, life is not very good, but, we're just going to monitor it. Eventually, the fetus dies, and then they say, okay, now we'll give you an abortion. It's sick. It's horrible. The lady died from blood poisoning. I mean, it's the saddest story I think I've heard this week. And
well, the story is a little more complicated than that. What they told him, that the husband, you're talking about the dentist who died, and they told him that she was probably going to die, but they couldn't give her an abortion because the church was against it, and it was a Catholic country, and they couldn't convince, and they begged her to do the abortion because they believed that she was going to die if she didn't get one. And their feeling was this, what I call pre-age reason of you, that, oh, if you're going to die at child's birth, that's obviously God's will. And despite the husband's begging and the rest of it, they just basically let her die. So it was a lot more intentional and unconscionable than it appears on the surface. And I thought it was one of the most despicable things I've ever listened to. So that's a more accurate telling of that story. And for anyone who has one, you can research it under, Dennis dies in Ireland. Yeah, and it's horrible. I mean, when Catholic women are out there, picketing for abortions in violation of the church, Rome ought to pay a little more attention. And I know John is anti-abortion, and I'm sure John thinks this is... John, do you think this is God's will? I mean, after all.
I'm not anti-abortion, Manny, and I could make a joke, but I won't.
Okay. I always thought you were.
No, not at all.
Oh, okay. Then
you never asked.
Huh?
You just assumed.
Abortion. Well, we'll quit there. No, John, your statements in the past minute. But the point is that this is, again, comes back to this issue that we were talking about earlier with the Republican Party, that they just don't get it and just aren't paying attention. And even this message will get lost on them.
I'm opposed to late-term abortion.
I am, too. And I apologize. That's correct. That is what you've always said. You're against late-term.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, the point is that there's no flexibility in the Catholic Church nor in the Republican Party on these issues, and I'm afraid it isn't going to work for them until they change. And I think that the world is going to have to accept the kind of freedoms that Sam says he can't understand why the Arab women have. And to a great extent, a lot of this has to do with that. One of my clients who's very active in women's rights has devoted a huge amount of money to these issues involving women who've been mistreated in Arab countries, and it's also that women are being treated like that. And yet it goes on every single day.
John, were you opening a Snickers bar?
I knew you were going to blame me. It wasn't me.
Now, Sam's the one who's playing on his cell phone, right, Sam?
No,
with
all due respect, I'm trying, my dog is about to bite my head off if I don't feed him.
That is the most cinematic excuse in the world.
Okay, we're down to the last moments of the program, but I'm hoping that we can discuss one more crisis, and it's a crisis at home, the hostess crisis. One news organization is claiming that Amazon sales of Twinkie bars has gone up 3,500% in the last couple of days. Worse still, there might be price gouging going on. I checked it out, and sure enough, there's one idiot trying to sell a case of Twinkies for $10,000.
What?
Well, you know, life's just an addiction away, right, John?
Well, I saw a box on Amazon, because I've been looking. I'm having some withdrawals. There's 20 to a box. A box, $180. $9.
Did you hear about? There's a Mexican billionaire. This is the rumor going around. Who's the one buying up all the Twinkies?
Oh, is it Carlos?
And, yeah, I forget what his name is, but he's allegedly buying up all the Twinkies. It's a big rumor going on the internet. I forget what his name is.
Amarillo Slim.
Yeah, he's hoarding them all. He's getting. We went out yesterday at Sam's Club to get stuff. Well, I did. My wife finally went for the first time because she couldn't get any other people ate free food there. And there was a host of stuff gone. Every Twinkie, ho-ho, ding-dong, food, whatever it is, was just gone. You know, I'm thinking, well, at least people, if we do hit the fiscal cliff, I hope all these people are putting them in the basements to have food to eat and, next year.
Well, have you ever seen, if you look it up, there's some people on the internet that have some that are as much as 10 years old, and they haven't aged. And by the way, there's someone who's got a McDonald's hamburger online that's, someone godly, 6-7 years old now, and it hasn't even started to age. Spoiled.
Yeah, someone said the shelf life of a Twinkie is 6 years. Is that true?
No, it's long.
Oh, there is no sell-by date on a Twinkie.
but Simon, aren't you for this? They've been poisoning the world with their products, right?
Well, you know, they're war rations is really what they are. And why is this going on? I don't want to harp on my books too much. But the bottom line is because these things are only chemicals. There's no food in them, and that's why they don't rot, is because they're basically chemical in nature, and chemicals don't rot. And so they'll last forever and ever and ever. As that's why McDonald's, if you look at a McDonald's burger, and if you look in our books, you'll find that there are over 54 ingredients in the bun, let alone everything else. Even the burger itself is only one part burger. The rest of it is essentially soy and other material. So if you're going to make that and sell that, you're right. It's never going to rot because there's no food in it to rot.
Okay. I want to take this actually to a more serious level. As silly as it may seem, you know, the disappearance of Twinkies from your local gas station or convenience store represents 18,000 jobs. Actually, the number of jobs at stake is somewhat larger. There's all those independent distributors that take product to convenience stores, gas stations, and load up the Twinkie aisle, and they're going to lose their jobs. Why doesn't someone, bail out the Twinkie? I mean, that they've bailed out the banks, that they've they bailed out the automotive manufacturers. Isn't it time that you know, Washington did something for Twinkie.
Well, you know, they've been in bankruptcy for years, Simon. Most people
don't. Yeah.
That's a part of this conversation that seems to be getting lost. Is basically, they used to be called Interstate Bakery, and they've been in and out of bankruptcy so long and so often, certainly the last 5 or 6 years, there's really not much business to for anybody to save, because they're just they're gone. I mean, they've made such a mess of their business over a period of years that there's nothing left. So what's there to save? And that's why no one's run in and tried to help this company survive, because there's nothing to help survive.
Manny, I have to ask you, I mean, would you say the same thing if Mars was in the same position and Snickers were...
you know, guys, I don't care for with the red spot on Mars. It wouldn't motivate me, and I'm sorry for our listeners who won't understand that joke. But, yeah, look, you come a time, I'm not like Mitt Romney and let GM fail, but you have to look at the value of what you're saving. The foodstuffs that are dying are ones that are killing Americans and causing them to be overweight and have health problems. So it's hard for me, after writing all these health books, to really see their loss in the economy as something, you know, bad. And in terms of the people being out of work, yeah, I think it's horrible, except sooner or later this company was going to fail. It's been on the verge of failing for some time right now. And again, at some point as a businessman, you're forestalling the inevitable. So Cargill hasn't bought them. Some of your other people you know in the industry have not bought them, Simon. And why haven't they bought them? Because there's no value in the company, and there's nothing they can do with it, and they see it as a dying business. So, yeah, it's a point in time where this business is sort of going to die and move on and pave the way for something else that to go on and hopefully be a lot healthier than what they've been selling.
And that obviously leads into asking John.
Well, I look at it like this. We could have had a company like Bain Capital step in, but you guys have so demonized them, there's no willingness. So goodbye, jobs.
What, you think Bain was going to come in and lay everybody off, send Twinkies to China so they could be made with toxic chemicals?
Manny, it's called venture capitalism. You restructure the company and not only save a lot of jobs, but grow the business like Staples. And more people will be hired than work now.
Yeah, well, John, that's an illusion. That's not how venture capitalism works. And having spent a lot of years in the stock business, they've managed to give everybody a huge illusion of what these cutthroats do, and that's not what they do. And if you study the particular businesses that you're talking about, I think you would be appalled at what – and I'm not picking on Bain, who I have a lot of respect for.
How about Sports Authority, them too?
Yeah, there are a whole bunch of businesses like that. But, you know, the manner in which they do it is so cutthroat, they leave everybody by the wayside. And you know what they leave the most by the wayside? Are the small creditors, the mom-and-pop businesses who may have sold them their stationery. The same way, you know, Sam rails about bankruptcy. And I keep saying to you guys, you have to accept the bankruptcy is a tool of the wealthy given to them by the Republican regime under Bush. And stupidly, you know, with the help of heavy donations, the Democrats joined in passing the Bankruptcy Act when it was redone. And all of us just sort of shook our heads. It was like, you know, why would you want to do what you just did? You gave a gift to the major corporations. People cannot file bankruptcy and get rid of their credit card debt, but a major corporation can file for bankruptcy and eliminate all their small creditors. So in the end, I don't have a lot of sympathy for these people, because I've spent a career watching all the people's lives they've destroyed. It's not flattering.
Sam, I have to ask you, because we're fresh out of time, what's your feeling about the Twinkie emergency?
Well, number one, I want to thank everybody for a great show. I really enjoyed it. I learned a lot about Arab women culture I never knew about, and it helped me in my formulate thinking, so it's always great to listen to you guys because I learned something. I wish everybody, the three of you, Peter, and your families and all the listening audience a wonderful Thanksgiving. I have 21 people coming here, and I can't wait for it. And let's think, and I deserve it after the last couple of weeks I've been through to have a lot of make merry, you know, and all that. And I know about that red star in Jupiter, man. I know what you're referring to.
I know you did. Red star.
And I wanted to say, I think, you know, and John, you bring up a good point. I think if any, obviously someone's going to buy the recipe and the right Twinkies and ho-hos and ding-dongs.
Right.
It won't be the same company, but someone's going to buy it and someone will make some money. It'll be the, you know, the ones usually do. And they won't be bailed out. That's just the way it is. But the products that they make good, like Twinkies, obviously, is a moneymaker and will be bought up by somebody who will disappear for a couple months to be repackaged under some new company. And I'm sure I'll see them on my grocery shelf pretty soon. So that's that. That's the nature of the game, you know. And they couldn't make it, and they lost it. And I'm sure some of people pick the good things out of a corporation that goes bankrupt, and the other things they let go, and the little guys get hurt. And same old story. So I want everybody to have a wonderful Thanksgiving, and thank you for the opportunity to talk to you guys today.
Sam, one quick last question. Do you see deep fried Twinkies on your on your menu?
No, I wouldn't. I don't. The worst food we serve is the deep fried. But I got to tell you, there's a new thing now that came out, and I can't wait for them next week. The Reuben bites.
Reuben bites.
I cannot wait to sample these. My salesman's bringing them in the Friday after Thanksgiving. He says it's the newest. It's the new craze. I'm getting those. I just can't wait to try Reuben bites and dip them in Thousand Island sauce. It's going to be awesome. So,
I don't believe that. Great.
Reuben bites. I love it.
Only in America.
Everybody have a wonderful Thanksgiving.
Thank you.
Okay. I'm speechless. John, do you have some parting thoughts for us?
I have a plethora, Simon, and I want to ask you, I wanted to get these in, but do you want me to comment on Ambassador Rice's nomination for Secretary of State, or
sure,
give you an analogy about how you guys so willingly embrace Obama?
Either one, John.
Pick one.
Nah. Pick both.
I know, John. I'm living in terror already, and you want me to pick my choice of way to die.
Go ahead, pick one. You want me to do them both? All right, real quick. All right, with Ambassador Rice, there's controversy about her being elevated to Secretary of State. I think the Republicans should have confirmed that nomination expeditiously and forthwith, because I think she's the ideal representative of this administration's values. She's capable of receiving directives or talking points, regurgitating them to the world eloquently and with sincerity, of course, absent reflection or conscience. She's an effective, well-oiled automaton, instilling confidence in both our nation's allies and adversaries. And like I said, this foreign policy will be just as successful as domestic policy. Now, about you guys having this reflexive, intrinsic reaction to defend the president and his administration, I would say, Sam, you're almost here, too, with ardent zeal. Anyone affiliated with his administration, you guys instinctively defend. And I wanted to personalize this to understand your malady. And I came up with something, Simon, which engenders the same feelings in me. It's a movie, and it's actually from your region of the country, Deliverance. I don't know if you guys saw that. Because you're right in that area, Simon. So,
no, he isn't. Not.
I want to say about that movie, props to James Dickey and John Borman. Well done on both ends. But whenever I watch that movie, because I know what's going to happen to Ned Beatty later in the movie, when him and Burt Reynolds are canoeing down those rapids and, knowing what's going to befall poor Ned, I'm extremely sympathetic to the guy. When Bert's screaming at him, paddle faster,
exhorting him to greater heights and imperiling his safety, like going over the falls. I yell in the direction of the screen, leave him alone, he's doing the best he can. It would be like if I were with you, Simon, I'd say, Simon, paddle faster, perfidious Albion.
John, you're definitely on your mark today.
But it's like the same, Annie. I feel like toward Ned Beatty like you do the president. Extreme sympathy for him.
I don't feel, listen, I'm not crazy about what Obama does. I just find the Republicans kind of clueless right now. The one doesn't relate to the other. They are who they are.
Criticize him, he's doing the best he can.
Funny, I said that about Romney a few times during the election, too. Anyway, go ahead. Sam, I guess I'm up next. We're at that point.
Yep.
All I can do is wish everybody a happy Thanksgiving. The Jews are going to take care of themselves, and they're also going to take care of the Arabs along the way. The problem, if any, with all of this is not with them. It's the reaction of the other countries. Who comes to the aid of the Arab countries and what positions they take and what threats they make, not unlike what I commented with Khrushchev back in 1955 when I was a young man. And that's just the way it is in this world. Is no longer one country against everyone else or this or that. What we have is a problem in this country. It's a constant domino. Everything that happens is a domino relating to something else. And we have to get used to it. So decisions can't be made simply. And the consequences are more severe now than they've ever been because of the obvious threats of a nuclear disaster and the fact that many of these Arab countries are quite capable of getting control of nuclear weapons. So we didn't handle them so well, which is one of their points. So I'm not so certain how well they're going to handle them. So remember that every day. It's not the Arab countries. It's the people who are pushing them to fight this war behind the scenes and ultimately what's going to happen with them. And they're the ones who are going to decide the scope of this war, and that's what we all have to live with.
And I'm going to wrap this up with thank you very much, everyone that took part today. It was a wonderful discussion. We'll be back next Sunday with new and exciting issues. Until then, this is Simon Barrett wishing everyone a happy, healthy, and safe week. We'll talk again soon. Goodbye.